Something that, at least in my mind, is absolutely fascinating that we see in Parsha and Parshas Matos. The pasuk tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu was angry at the officers, angry at the leaders, because when they went off to fight the Midianim, the Midianites, they did not destroy all of the women who had been involved in trying to seduce the Jewish men, as we were reading about in Parshas Balak and in Parshas Pinchas. And the officers spared these women, and Moshe came and said that is inappropriate. These were the women who were responsible for seducing, for destroying the men, the nation. They brought about the Magedfa. And Moshe says in Parshas Matos, these are the women, right? These are the ones who caused it. Bidvar Bil'am, in what Bil'am had said, in what Bil'am had encouraged, Limsar Ma'al Ba'ashem Al-Dvar Pa'or, that they committed a betrayal when it came to Dvar Pa'or, Magifa Ba'adat Adonai. And it's because of these women that the Magifa came in the nation of Israel, in the Adas Hashem. Now, if you read this pasuk, what a person might notice if they are an expert in Tanakh, and I myself did not notice this until I saw it pointed out, is that in this pasuk it says that the women did this bidvar Bil'am, based on the say-so, based on the advice of the great Rasha Bil'am, that the women went ahead and the women seduced the Jewish men. Now, what's fascinating is that back in its place, at the end of Parshas Balak and the beginning of Parshas Pinchas, it doesn't say anything about Bil'am. It doesn't say that Bil'am had given the advice to the Midianite women to do this. It doesn't say that Bil'am had encouraged it. The only thing we know about is that Bil'am came to presumably curse the Jewish people, and instead of cursing them, he gave this beautiful bracha, or a quasi-bracha, matovu. And he came back and he told Balak afterwards, he said, I told you I would not be able to curse them. I wouldn't be able to do anything against them if God didn't want it. And we know nothing about the advice that Bil'am gave to these Midianite women to go seduce the men. It's only now later, in Parshas Matos, two Parshas later, does the Torah sort of speak up and say that this entire thing happened because of Bil'am's advice. And in fact, we know, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Tosfos, and Rashi alludes to it later, that when Bil'am was coming back from cursing the Jewish people, or giving them a bracha, as it was, so he saw that some of the Jewish men had got involved in an intimate relationship with some of the Moabite women, and he went and he told Balak, and he told some of the Midianim, he said, God detests Zima, God detests sexual inappropriateness. And if you want to have God's back turned from the nation, so the way to do it is by having the Midianite women come after the men, come after the Jewish people. But the Torah never says that. That's only sort of alluded to. It's the backstory of what the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin. It's only now, again, two parshiyos later, where we're told of Bil'am's involvement in the crime, in the seduction of the Midianite women of the Jewish men. And that speaks to a concept that we know that the Midrashim tell us, and the Rishonim and the Gemara, that Divrei Torah, aniyim b'mekomam, namely that sometimes they're poor in their own place, in the place itself. Namely, the Torah does not speak out something explicitly in its own place. V'ashirim b'mekom acherim. And it tells more in a different place. So sometimes in the moment, the Torah might be somewhat scanty when it comes to details. It doesn't really lay out an issue. But then maybe 5 parshim later, 10 parshim later, a different sefer later, then we find out more about what was going on back in that previous time. Again, the concept that the Divrei Torah are poor in one place, but they're wealthy in another place. And another place is going to explicate more to fill out a certain picture. Where do we see that? in many, many places. But let me just lay out two of them briefly. One place we know is by Yaakov and by Lavan. We know that the Torah tells us in Parshas Vayetzei, all the years that Yaakov was working for Lavan, everything that Yaakov did. But it's only later, when Yaakov, at the end of Parshas Vayetzei, he became very, very angry at Lavan, and he exploited at Lavan. And it's only then afterwards that they say that during the 20 years that Yaakov worked for Lavan, what he had to toil through, and what he had to endure, and that Lavan kept on changing the wages, and Lavan did this, and Lavan did that. So when it describes Yaakov working for Lavan, it says nothing. But later, Yaakov got upset at Lavan, and he said, you know what I had to do for you, and I lost all this money, and you changed my wages, and I toiled in the heat. It didn't say anything to Mekoman. It only said afterwards, explained what Yaakov had to go through for Lavan. There's another example also, another case as well, and that's by Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech, at the end of Sefer Shmuel Aleph, right by the end of his life, he was very nervous about fighting the Plishtim. He already felt like a defeated person. He was already sort of beaten down by life, so to speak. And he decided the only thing he can do was go to one of these women who worked in witchcraft, who worked as a sorceress. Sometimes you'll go to a really bad neighborhood and you'll see every block somebody wanting to read tarot cards or read your palm. And this was even much more than that, the sorceress in question. And he, to some degree, debased himself to go speak to the sorceress. And in that context, he had to hide himself. He had to disguise himself to go speak to the sorceress. And in that context, the sorceress tells Shaul, who is hidden, said, you know what King Shaul did? King Shaul had already wiped out all the sorceresses and all of the people practicing magic. And the sorceress herself alluded to something that happened earlier, namely Shaul, when he first became king, wiping out all these people. But in its own place, when Shaul first became king, it doesn't say anything about it. It's only later, when Shaul himself has to go speak to this lady, so only then do we find out that Shaul, when he first became king, was involved in wiping out all these people. Again, in its place, it says nothing. It only says something later. Divrei Torah, Mekomam Aniyim, Vashir Mimakom Acherim. And they're wealthy. They're more expansive in other places.
Sorry.
And the question is, why? What's the necessity? Why isn't Torah just lay out what happened? If Shaul came to power, and he wiped out a sorceress when he came to power, let it say that. If Yaakov had to endure certain things for Lavan, so let it say that the Shas Maisa. Why only allude to it afterwards? And it seems pretty clear of in each case what the answer is, and in every circumstance, when the Torah utilizes this device, it seems clear why he does that. Yaakov went through his work for Lavan, and he only exploded afterwards at Lavan. So it's only afterwards did Yaakov fully feel, was he fully impassioned, fully angered about what Lavan had done. Maybe when he was working, he was just focused on working, focusing on marrying Leah and Rachel, and he was doing what he had to do. But it's only afterwards where sort of the avalanche of feelings that what the last 20 years had been, only then does the Torah go ahead and tell us what happened. That the wages were changed and Yaakov wasn't treated properly, because the Torah is writing this from the perspective of how Yaakov felt about what those 20 years were like. It's not giving a biography, it's not giving a history, it's trying to sort of explain the emotions of the people in the Torah. So too when it came to Shaul. If when Shaul first became king, it would tell us that Shaul wiped out the Ovim, the Yidonim, the sorcerers, people doing black magic, it wouldn't really be meaningful. It's meaningful only now when Shaul had to stoop where he himself went to a sorceress, and probably reminding us of how he must have felt when after years of wiping out these people, he now was in a position of life where he was defeated and he had to turn to them himself to underscore the psychological, the emotional, the feelings of what Shaul must have felt like at that moment. And telling us this history of Shaul is only meaningful now. It would not have been meaningful if it would have mentioned in the proper place. The Torah is not about necessarily just writing a history about this happened and that happened. It's trying to explain a little bit the feelings of the people involved and to flesh out a more accurate and a fuller psychological picture of the people. There's an example of that, a little bit different, but similar in a lot of ways as well, that I mentioned this past week in Shul, my shiur with Menucha Maariv, and that is, and just please allow me a moment to try to explain this properly, trying to figure out the proper date of when Yerushalayim was destroyed during the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. Because there seems to be a contradiction, or there is a contradiction. The Mishnah in Tanya says that it was destroyed on the 17th day of Tammuz, Shavuot of Tammuz. But the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu said the Yerushalayim was destroyed not on the 17th day, but when? On the 9th day of Tammuz. So was it the 17th day? Was it the 9th day? So the Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud, notes this discrepancy and said very simple. The first Beis HaMikdash, Yerushalayim, was destroyed on the 9th day of Tammuz. And the second Beis HaMikdash, in fact, it was destroyed on the 17th day of Tammuz. Two different Bat HaMikdashos, two different times of history, two different dates. Now let me tell you this amazing Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud. The Yerushalmi said that even in the first Beis HaMikdash, the Yerushalayim was destroyed on the 17th day of Tammuz. But what happened? The people were so confused, and they were so upset, and they were starving, and they had such tear dose, such worries, and such concerns, that the people themselves thought that it was the 9th day of Tammuz on which Yerushalayim was destroyed. And therefore, the Pasuk conveys not the actual date, but the date in which the people thought Yerushalayim was destroyed. So the Rishonim say, okay, but if we really know it's the 17th day, and Yirmiyahu, when he wrote it, he knew it was the 17th day, so why put down the wrong date? The 9th day of Tammuz, put down the 17th day of Tammuz. And with Meforshim point out, it's such a beautiful idea, that when Yirmiyahu wrote this Sefer and God told Yirmiyahu what to write, he wanted to tell Yirmiyahu, keep the date of the 9th of Tammuz, for us to remember what it was like living in Yerushalayim, for us to remember how difficult it was, so much so that the people completely forgot what date it was, and they were so confused, and they were so overwhelmed. So even though the Pasuk was going to give the wrong date, literally mamish the wrong date of Yerushalayim's destruction, this way we can remember and think back, have a snapshot, a glimpse, what people were living through during that period of time. Rav Kook pointed out so beautifully, based on that Yerushalmi, the Torah is not interested in just being a history book of dates that we remember thousands of years later. The Torah is trying to convey moral messages, ethical messages. It's trying to convey the feelings of the people involved. And therefore, when it came to Yaakov again, it's not just giving us a history, but by giving the details later of what happened to Yaakov, it's conveying what Yaakov's feelings were like at that time. That's really what's important. By only telling us later that Shaul had tried to destroy the Ov, the Yidoni, the sorceresses, the witches, it's giving us a glimpse into how he felt in that moment, because he himself had to go seek out these people. It's already trying to flesh out psychological, emotional, and ethical ideas, as opposed to being just a list of halachos and dates and facts. So all that makes sense, of course, in the context of Parshas Matos as well. Why is it that Bilam is only ascribed to being the person responsible for the events of the Midianite women that occurred two Parshios ago? Why doesn't it say then? Why is only Bilam mentioned over here? And I think the answer is somewhat obvious. If we were told back at the end of Parshas Balak that it was Bilam who gave this Eitza and Bilam who pushed the Midianite women, we would in some way perhaps think we could blame Bilam for what happened to the Jewish men, that the Jewish men went running after the Midianite women and they were involved in sexual inappropriateness and Balpur. And we could say, you know what, it's Bilam's fault. Very strong, Navi, this charismatic person. He was behind it. Let's point fingers in his direction. So the Torah is silent about Bilam's role. So that the only people that would take responsibility is not Bilam, but are Am Yisrael themselves. Bilam might have given that bracha, Bilam might have given that curse, he might have given that encouragement. At the end of the day, we, collectively as a nation, took the steps to begin these relations with the women, to bring about the Magefa, and therefore we only want to highlight the role of Am Yisrael as opposed to giving us even a Pesach, even an opening, to somehow place that onto Bilam. And that's why when we describe it, Vayachel Ha'am Liznos El Benos Moab, that the nation themselves began to have relationships with the women of Moab and the women of Midian. Now, so often, this is not Muslim, but we have a tendency to blame. Say, you know, I did X, Y, and Z because I was addicted. I did this because I was desperate for money. I did that because I needed whatever the case may be. And we're always pointing fingers and saying that, okay, I'm responsible, but really there are underlying factors for whatever bad decisions, whatever bad actions that I took. My mother was this way, my father was this way, I was born with a certain temper, I was born this, and even the best of people find themselves pointing fingers and making implicitly other people responsible. In fact, we know if a person reads through the keynotes of Tisha B'Av, so many of the early keynotes are us blaming God. God, how can you do this to us? How can you bring about this destruction? Blaming the Babylonians, blaming the Romans. And as the keynotes go on, we say, no, 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 this was us. Right? We can always point to other people, but where is our culpability? Where is our responsibility? So again, Bilam was not mentioned in the place where it spoke about the actions of the Jewish people, because that, in a certain subtle way, would let the Nesla off the hook. But later on, we're told, yeah, Bilam has some level of responsibility, some level of culpability. It was Bilam who gave that advice, and therefore sort of Bilam's full role is fleshed out later on in Sefer Bamidbar. We should always, and I give all of us two brachos. Bracha number one is, as I said, take full responsibility, actions that are ours, even if there might be other mitigating factors. Even though Bilam might have been involved, we still point the finger at the Bnei Yisrael. And number two, to be zochah, that we read through the Chumash, to realize the layers and layers of nuance, of subtle nuance, of beautiful ideas that are really ensconced almost in every pasuk and every decision of what to include, what not to include, the ordering, the expression, the words that are used, the tense that are used. It's like the Chumash is like this beautiful, beautiful treasure trove that a person was sensitive to. They would just be so filled and so inspired by the constant lessons of our eternal, beautiful Torah Tekadosha. Everyone have a great Shabbos. Thanks for calling in. I look forward to speaking again next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.